Good morning, citizen lobbyist.
Good morning, Mike.
Ah, good morning. How are you doing?
Pretty good.
Well, we have all kinds of interesting stuff. I woke up early this morning and I checked a variety of the media sources, and it looks like finally, both out in Juneau as well as here in the Valley, there are all kinds of things happening. There are suggestions about particularly how to deal with the budget, or it's a whole bunch of stuff. Where would you like to start to talk today? I know you've been out and about picking up information yourself.
Well, you did attend the Palmer City Council meeting, I'm assuming, Tuesday night, did you?
Yes, I did. And
I'd like to talk about their new board and any updates on that first.
Well, the Palmer City Council was a kind of a an interesting time. There were two people that were on the phone, including the mayor and the council member Best. And so the replacement, Steve Carrington, for running the meeting was there. He did a pretty good job. They rolled along and took care of business, and we're out in a pretty short time. The real discussion coming out of the Palmer City Council had to do with something that had appeared before on the previous meeting's agenda, and that was a presentation by John Lee and others from the Economic Development Board about a recommendation for how to process requests for grant monies from the city by nonprofit organizations. And that had gone back to for a little more work, and it once again came forward. And I thought it looked pretty good, but there was a considerable discussion about the definition of a nonprofit in one location, and also a kind of a prolonged discussion about the use of a matrix by applicants who would use it to determine how to present themselves in a good light, so that they would be sure that they had everything covered, and that the city would have all the information necessary to make a good decision. And there was a kind of a thought expressed by Councilmember Hansen that this would be a burden somehow for the staff. And I think over time it finally emerged that actually, it would be a help and make things move more efficiently if people at any level, whether you're an applicant or a member of the administration or you're on the council, and you had something concrete to look at that allowed you to compare different grant proposals.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I spent
so
a little... Go ahead.
Did you get the feedback that it was going to be too much from the staff, or that...
No. In fact, the city manager expressed, I think, just the opposite. So I looked there and I wondered a while at why there would be a concern about this. Except to say, and the reason why I'm talking about it a little bit is because I think underlying much of discussions is not the specific item that's sitting there, but some concerns that people have about, for example, over-bureaucratizing a process that the city is involved with. Now, that discussion happens at all levels, at the borough, at the state level, and beyond, and make things simple. But you can oversimplify, and then what you introduce is a difficulty in making decisions because they tend to be made subjectively, and it makes it harder for an applicant to even know how best to portray themselves except to step up. I think there's one last point I'd like to make. I think the really interesting question is, in the past, small town Palmer, things came up occasionally and they were dealt with, and they were dealt with along the way just in time. I think what's happening with the growth of and the complexity of the city and the number of nonprofits working and involved with the city in one way or another, I think that the size of the population of applicants is growing, and that is that requires some kind of commensurate response by the city. And I think what you're seeing is that kind of thing happening. And the council has to decide how it wants to deal with being a bigger city.
Mm-hmm. Right. And, you know, those processes are really important, Mike, because a lot of times there's a lot of teeth gnashing at the beginning when somebody suggests a different way of doing something and some thought that it's going to take way more staff time or way more, money to do it. And then at the end, when those things come forward without a robust process at the beginning, it drags on and on and on. And that costs the city money, too. So to me, having a good framework of a good vetting process, having a good board that has a process that things go through and that you actually, the people, by the time it gets to the council members, it's been vetted adequately and the questions have been asked, saves them a lot of time and money. The boards are a minimal amount of money to run. It takes maybe one staff, maybe two at times. They're largely volunteer boards, so there's no money there. So to use the expertise, and not only that, the important buy-in from the people that live here is really kind of a leg up by the time it gets to the council. But, sometimes council members don't see that, not just picking on the Palmer Council, but also WSL and any other governmental body, that they do like to micromanage sometimes, and they feel a little deflated, I think, when something is handed to them already decided and they can't be such a strong decider. So there's a lot in play here.
Yeah, and I think that the last point you make is extremely important. It's kind of an interesting thing. If you've done a good job of creating a board and you've handed them a task and they do a good job with it, and it's presented well, and I must say that there's some pretty impressive people on this particular economic development board. When they present this information, you don't want to be a rubber stamp. On the other hand, there are many other tasks that the council has in front of it that might warrant more attention than the detail down into these kinds of things. But
And also just one last thing, and also going back to the reason they developed these boards is for a system that is a vetting system. And if you don't allow them to do their work, the other thing is very important is you hit on there, Mike, on who's appointed to these boards and that it's a balance of ideas and not one side or the other, because that's just not proper vetting and it doesn't do the job of the people.
Well, let's segue a little bit, because one of the interesting articles that appeared on the front page of the Alaska Dispatch News this morning dealt with a fire service area and a number of responders who are active fire people who are saying that their particular board, the one that helps to make sure that they have equipment and things are running, et cetera, hadn't done them well. And that's kind of an interesting thing, because sometimes whether it's a fire service area or a road service area, there are groups of people there that have an important role to play because they make the recommendations and are involved with ensuring that whatever service is provided in that area meets the needs of the population.
And well, again, that sort of addresses what I said before about boards and the importance of how they're appointed, and that we're not appointing too many people with a very tight ideology of the way money should be spent and the way development should happen. And if you do that, and in this case, the mayor has been most of the appointing for those board members, there's been a lot of upheaval a little bit in the board situation. Some longtime board members have been looked over by the mayor with some, the mayor's new men, by and large, there's been some women, mostly men, being appointed. And, that could be just playing out at this point, that they're not working in the best interest. I will say, having lived in those areas with those service area boards, they're not very highly attended. It's not unusual for these boards to meet, and they do, they do put out a public process as far as having them on the calendar and those sorts of things. And, it's very odd sometimes to have two or three people show up unless there's a problem. And again, we're a reactionary public, and things happen. We tend to get, what I describe often is getting all wee-weed up about things. But if it's not affecting us, we're just kind of overlooking it, and then someone brings it to our attention, and the process is past us. So I'm not sure. I didn't read the article that close, so I'm not really sure if that's the case here. But, you know, some elections have consequences, and appointments sometimes take a long time to play out to where they're sometimes not in the best interest of the public. And that could or could not be here in this case.
Well, we'll have an opportunity to talk a little bit more about that in Valley Edition.
Yeah, and Boswell will be there.
Yeah, and the rest of that. But that was one piece. But there are also, interestingly enough, a number of other things happening, particularly in Juneau. And one actually starting in Anchorage. There's an organization called Commonwealth North. I think you're familiar with it. Many our listeners may well be too. But Dermot Cole writes about their call for an overhaul of the state budget. They have done a study. This is an organization that's been existing for a long, long time that takes a look at things happening in our state. And they've opened up an interesting set of questions around, for example, renegotiating contracts with state employees, all of that kind of stuff. It's an example, I think, of our moving into maybe the second third of the legislative session, because we have also, for example, a number of committees that have acted to target various programs for cuts. One of interest to us always is the education funding. And in this case, Representative Lynn Gaddis, who's from the Valley, managed to review the Department of Education Early Development budget and to cut somewhere almost 20% from the unrestricted general funds budget. And Representative Gaddis is a chair of that House Finance Committee's Education Subcommittee. And I think what was interesting there, as it was in another subcommittee as reported, is that there was a concern expressed that there was a limited discussion that perhaps minority committee members or members with a minority view or any view didn't get to express it. Okay. Like they couldn't ask questions. There was some quoted response to say, well, it would take too long, which seems to be an inappropriate response for something of this sort, saying, oh, you can talk about it when it gets to the full committee, et cetera. We don't have time to do that right now.
Well, I mean, yeah, and the vote, they know what the votes are on the whole committee and the sentiment of the committee. So that, I agree, that's a very, very weak argument. And again, we're talking about public process here. They're about a third into the session right now. They knew that they were going to have to take this recommendation up. There could have been time allotted for public process. They've had plenty of evenings meetings where they've allowed the public to speak on other issues. So this appears to me to be exactly what it is, a short-changing of public process.
Well, what is emerging, though, is that as the legislature begins and others around begin to think about how to do things differently, the suggestion seems to be that let's go beyond just a little bit of a cut here or there. For example, there were some suggestions of toying with the entire budgeting process, that it not be a process that be for the year, but that be a partial of year, and then they'll come back and look at it again when they resume, and extending things like extending the legislative session from 90 to 120 days so that they can actually have more to do with this. So I think at least at this time, there seems to be clearly an impact of the lowered oil tax money and the realization that we could get on through here, but that perhaps something large has to be done. I think that's what's coming across. And the real question remains, during the rest of this session, will the price of oil remain as it is, or will it start moving up and take the pressure off?
Well, you know, that's really the question. Do we really have to do something big? It's interesting. Yesterday, noted and very applauded mostly by people that listened to him, and is Neil Fried was here for the city of Palmer to have a Palmer Chamber of Commerce. And he brought a nice slideshow, just kind of letting people know what's happening in the Matsu Valley. And it's always interesting to hear Neil, and I'd heard him earlier in the year, and he had actually tweaked this quite a bit by new data that he had. But one of his slides was very interesting in that saying a lot of people, I think people that are taking these big steps of reaction, are saying, oh, it's the 80s all over again. We're going to crash. We're going to crash. And Neil lined up some pretty good arguments for the fact that this is nothing like the 80s. You know, during the 80s, most significantly, is we were coming off a boom of a pipeline. So we were at a boom-bust situation. And now we're not like that. We're tackling with a low price of oil. And then for the low price of oil, he made a good comment that, you know, if you look back from the time we were pumping oil, the average price has always been $50 a barrel. We just based our budgets on some really high years. So, you know, I think there is a bit of an overreaction, but I think sometimes an overreaction is used to get an agenda through on certain subjects. The sky is falling, fear, works pretty good. And you can always, it's easy to unwind that when you're dropped a bunch of money in your lap. So I'm not as concerned of this being a monetary crisis as it is just a furthering of some very ultra-conservative agendas out there. You know, our state and our borough is about priorities. What is a priority? And maybe we need to they're moving away from that discussion, it looks to me, on what their priorities should be. And certainly education should be one. By Constitution, it's our top one or one of our top ones. And they're moving it down to just saying we're going to cut our way to success because of the cost of oil, and I'm not buying it, honestly.
Well, it sounds as if Neil Fried's message was somewhat consistent with Tim Bradner's at the earlier lecture that he presented in the Valley.
Mm-hmm. But is anybody listening? So it is interesting. It is a two-year budget, but that's one of the, or two-year session. That is another area that's supposed to come up at some point, although I don't think I've seen any legislation on it, about the fact that there are some that want to work to a two-year budget. There's a lot of things on the table that get no attention, important things to a lot of important, you know, things like Aaron's Law that's gotten a lot of discussion, and closer to home for me is smoke-free workplaces. And those things are, you know, get tossed off to the side in these 90-day sessions as they zero in on what they, you know, right now with the budget and cut, and you know, a lot of good legislation doesn't get any legs because of that. So there has been some talk about a two-year budget session with some ability to make some changes in the off year should it become the case. And maybe that's what the case is being built here for that.
Well, now that you've mentioned smoking, I can point out that the city of Palmer did not talk about marijuana legislation at the local level. And, of course, we're seeing increasing examples. The city of Wasilla acted in a very, what I found, strange way. I'm still looking to get an explanation on the one item that seems to be the poster for all of this is the restriction on baking brownies with marijuana content within the city of Wasilla, while being able to purchase brownies that have been so infused and baked outside the city and consuming the product inside the city. And the real question comes, how do you know the difference, whether it was a Wasilla-baked or outside Wasilla-baked brownie?
Yeah, this whole subject of marijuana is it's very troubling. I mean, we certainly have to have a discussion about it, and there are some regulations and legislation that should be made. But, you know, someone pointed out to me yesterday that, you know, we have strong data that shows what our problems are here in the Valley. And that data shows that the leading cause of our problems are alcohol and tobacco addiction and abuse. And it seems we're just kicking that data aside to take care of this problem we expect. With no real solid data, there is some international data, but there's no real strong data on marijuana. and its effects. And there's, again, you know, an overreaction to something that might happen, the boogeyman that might come to visit, and they're just not paying attention and taking adequate steps to deal with what they should already know, for the thousands of dollars that have been spent to show them that drug and alcohol abuse and the lack of facilities here and the lack of intervention out here to take care of that is causing most of the problems. So that's disappointing to me overall. But and I'm sort of glad that Palmer has taken more of a wait-and-see approach. It's characteristic of the way Palmer does business. They just don't often, anyway, have too many knee-jerk reactions. They take a more, it's like they do their planning, a little more guided, slower approach to the way they do things. They do it for development, and it looks like they're taking this approach with marijuana, which, well, people flail around with all these things because, you know, if you put those wrong things in and they're tested, they can end up with some substantial lawsuits that you become party of. So I think, you know, I think the cautious approach to what's happening, letting the legislature do their work, you know, before there's, you know, not creating some type of a crisis you have to respond to, is really the way you do good governing. So it'll be interesting to see the way that it plays out in Wasilla. I thought Brandon Wall made some excellent remarks on why he thought that these portion, and I think Colleen Sullivan Leonard also had a comment on the brownie thing and how, you know, crazy it was to put these regulations in that they couldn't enforce. So we'll see how it all plays out and if there's some rollback of that or any type of, you know, blowback from it, I guess, so to speak.
Well, just to hit a topic that was mentioned also at the Palmer City Council and one that it has ramifications broader than just the city of Palmer, is a look at the Corrections Department, in particular the idea of reducing in size or eliminating, in some cases, corrections facilities. And that was an interesting possibility that was expressed. And it'll be discussed at great length. Of course, here in the city of Palmer, there's a lot of involvement with the correctional system. Everything from the court system mm-hmm. To the temporary correctional facility that we have, to the police and troopers involved with all of that. And so any change there has an implication for the economy of the area, the many jobs that are associated with those and the rest. But more importantly, there was some interesting discussion about the whole point of being able to house prisoners in state. And I think a summary comment was made that actually it's still cheaper to house an inmate out of state than in state.
Well, and a whole big overlook at who is in prison and what is the cost of that to us. And where we're putting our money, where it counts, where we're, again, taking care of some of these people that get out of prison and don't, you know, go back into prison. That's where the savings is. And it's hard to get people to look at that and focus on that than what's right in front of them, which are the costs. So before we go too far down here, Mike, there is an assembly meeting next week, and I'm looking at the agenda on it now. There's a 6-page agenda. There's some kind of interesting
tell us about
things in the packet. They're going to have a lot of gas. They've got a lot of gas LEDs to approve here, which is kind of the way it goes right before the construction season. Let's see, Assemblyman Sykes has one in here that's sort of interesting, to revisit the way the assembly is seated. So that could be very interesting. I've heard some discussion a little bit about that. There's a resolution in here to authorize eminent domain to acquire property needed for the Point McKenzie rail extension, which could bring up some discussion. And I think that there's something in here from the new assembly person, Barbara Doty. I can't remember what it is here now. Oh, it's a resolution requiring the composition and residency requirements for the Board of Regents for the University of Alaska.
Oh, right. I heard something about that.
Yeah, so that could be some interesting things to look about on Friday. There's also an ordinance, a new business being introduced, amending the Health and Social Services Board. So I don't know if they're going to cut down the amount of seats on that or increase it or what the direction is going to be there. So some interesting things. I think we could have a very interesting meeting.
Oh, I'm happy you reviewed the agenda. Sometimes that's a important thing to do, to give people a heads up so that they can listen as we stream it or attend the meeting in person. And I look forward to that. And, of course, the school board, which we have neglected today, talked very much about.
Yeah.
They're moving on. Presumably, they now have enough candidates. Wednesday.
They have 9 candidates now.
Okay, and so out of them, they should be able to pick someone, agree, and they'll have a full board again.
They'll have 2 meetings to do it in, Mike. It'll be interesting to see if they throw in. They did this in a special meeting last time when they had this many candidates. They have 2 by the amount of time that they're supposed to complete their work. So they'll either have to tack it on to this upcoming meeting. I think they probably don't have time to advertise it for that. And then the next meeting would be the very last one where they have to appoint and make their decision. So we may see a special meeting for them with 9 active candidates. Actually, 9, maybe 1 dropped out. There was one that has pulled their application. So it's either 8 or 9.
Okay. We'll talk about that again. Well, we've come down to the end of another.
Let me just add one little thing.
Sure.
I want the public to know. Governor Walker announced yesterday that Governor Walker is opening an office in Palmer.
Whoa.
Really good news. It was announced at the chamber yesterday. They're opening an office over at the state building where the old hospital was, and they plan to staff it. And I think that's really good news. You can come to the city of Palmer. You can go to the borough. You can go meet the governor. Go to the governor's office. Go to the court system.
I like it.
I like it.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Thank you for that news. Thank you, Citizen Lobbyist, for calling in today. And we'll talk with you tomorrow on Valley Edition. Have a good day.
All right. You too.